Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. We will be talking today with volleyball associate head coach Sean Carter. He's going to get us prepared for a homestand this weekend. The Shockers play SMU Friday at 6, Saturday at noon at Coke Arena. The Shockers are 7-0 overall, 2-0 in the American Athletic Conference as they get ready for this weekend. When you listen to Chris Lamb, when you listen to Shocker coaches talk about this team, you can tell the approval, you can tell the excitement. They really like the style of play that this team is exhibiting. So, Sean, tell us a little bit about this team and how they've gotten back to that energetic, feisty style that people really like about Shocker volleyball.
I think the biggest thing is just the individual personalities of all of our players. We've changed some things as a coaching staff as far as how we're going to train and a bunch of stuff like that we could get into. But ultimately, it's them. It's the personalities of the kids. They've been really, really easy to coach and to push and to, you can kind of get on a few of them and they just come back wanting more. They don't get down too much. They really enjoy each other. A lot, even though, certain girls hang out with, others more often outside of, the gym, but that's normal. But for the most part, from top to bottom, I think it's as, likable of a group as far as the whole team we've had. And I think that just creates an environment that, tends to be a little bit easier when it comes to the mental side of the team and, all of that stuff.
That intangible, that chemistry has to be kind of an ongoing process and a difficult thing for coaches to create. How much can you look for that while you're recruiting, and how much of it has to be done once you get them on campus and in the gym?
I think it's one in during the recruiting process is, can you identify behavioral qualities or traits or just things within the communication piece that, might trigger, hey, this is likely kind of the personality we're getting, but there's a lot of unknowns. Coaches have to do way more in investing in what kind of culture are you going to be. And I think your team adapts, kind of the personality of the head coach and coaches, at least coaching staff in particular, a lot. And they've definitely done that. And as far as, Chris has wanted to get back to, what made the program great, which was just hard work and be really good blocking and defending. And that's where we spent nearly all of our time in training in the spring, and the girls just adapted that. And then them liking each other so much has made our jobs easier as coaches, because we haven't had to invest so much team building, bonding, that kind of stuff that you would think, to make this kind of turnaround would be. It's just a credit to our players as far as just them just being willing to adapt, hey, this is who we're going to be as a team, and then letting us kind of have that vision for them. And then, it's nice that they're getting some positive reinforcement with some wins, that their work is paying off and that we're doing something right.
Which Shockers have stepped up in leadership roles to keep that chemistry in the right place?
I think the upperclassmen have always done a good job. Brooke is one of the more likable human beings you'll ever meet. She's maybe not always the loudest vocal leader, but she leads by example a lot. Emma Wright and Michaela have taken over more so of a senior leadership role as far as kind of leading and guiding some of the younger kids. But our freshman and sophomore classes for sure have personalities where, it's nice to have some older leaders, but they also, they dance to the beat of their own drum a little bit. So they're ones that, they will be future leaders, and they don't need that supervision as much as some maybe other freshman classes as we've had in the past, because a lot of them are so outgoing. So that kind of helps that. So that's really how it's been. It's kind of been a collective more so than just one or two few individuals, which hopefully is better.
I'm glad you brought up Brooke Smith, because I've enjoyed her career from the standpoint Sometimes she's in the lineup, sometimes she's out of the lineup, but she always seems ready. She always seems solid and steady. How will we remember Brooke Smith's career here at Wichita State?
How I remember it might be different than others, but I hope people remember it as she's the ultimate teammate. I don't know if there's been someone that seems to have carried the weight of their teammates more than Brooke. Like, if somebody's not doing well or not feeling well or mentally not there, I think, you know, Brooke is just so empathic that, like, that, you know, seeing someone else hurting or struggling on her team, you know, she feels that. So I think she's a comforter, but she also, you know, she doesn't make excuses. She just is, and whether she agrees or disagrees with the coaching staff, you'd never know. She just waits for her number to be called and then gives it the best she can. And she's always working, and she's been in and out of the training room all the time with Kat, but you would never know that, you know, that's never an excuse of, oh, my back is bugging me, or, oh, my shin's hurt, or, oh, my this, or, oh, my that. It's just, she's really an ultimate professional. She shows up, she does the job that she needs to do. She has an amazing attitude. And she was someone that was on the floor in front of 7,000 people when we played Missouri. And just like, you know, she probably wasn't ready for that moment, but didn't matter. She got in there, did the job she needed to, tried her best, did exactly what Brooke does. And, you know, she was successful, and she's doing that now. And it's nice to see her have even more success early on so far this season.
Who's been the most pleasant surprise so far?
I think there's been a lot. Honestly, unfortunately, like, for the fans and everybody else, they don't get to see the girls that aren't in the lineup as much. So, like, Haley Pluggy and Lauren Phillips have been amazing this past week. And those are, you know, as of right now, two of our backup setters. But, you know, they're doing really well, where, like, you know, Michaela and Casey have, you know, competition in the gym, and I think that's made Michaela and Casey both better. Same with, you know, our littles, with Kylie and Shay, and Shay's gotten so much better, which fans don't see. You know, she got to serve two balls at Missouri State, you know, and she's been earning that right to have that opportunity in practice. So I think the kids that aren't seen right now are the ones that are really raising the level of our gym, because their play is as close to the kids that are actually on the floor. It makes our practices really competitive. So it's like it's kind of match like in practice. So we don't have to force create that environment, because our drills and everything are competitive just because of the level of play so high. So, you know, that's who I've been happiest with, is the girls that haven't got playing time, which it's usually easy for them to kind of check out and not be as motivated, but they haven't done that at all.
Shockers last played on February 12th. So how do you go about structuring practices when you have these, you know, these gaps between matches?
I think coaches and all have their opinions. I think some would hate having their team sit. I think some of that could be, you know, yeah, you want us playing, just getting the rhythm, but you know, you deal the cards you play the cards you're dealt, and you know, we got a break and we've gotten to try some things, and you know, maybe it was good, maybe it was bad, you know, because last week, I don't know if, you know, Nicole would have been able to play last week. She was in a concussion protocol. So who knows? That could have been positive, negative. If we, you know, same with SMU. SMU had two girls out with COVID protocol. So, you know, that's not the reason why we didn't play. They had all the things they had to struggle with, you know, last week with the weather and all of that down there. So SMU will have their best team back this week as well. So, I mean, who knows? I think we just train. Chris doesn't even think about those things. It's just, hey, we got a job to do. This is where we're trying to get better today. This is what we're going to prepare for. And then, you know, the girls will be ready to go when game time happens.
If you could target one area for improvement, what would be first on your mind?
Maybe because I'm doing the offense, I would like to see our kill percentage get higher, and especially our what we call first ball kill, meaning when they serve our very first attack, can we end the rally then, so it doesn't end up in this long rally? We want them to serve it at us pass it and end the rally right now, and then run back and serve. We got to get better there. If we do, the Shockers can be scary. I'd be really excited because we're doing a great job point scoring and playing defense and figuring out how to win rallies once it gets started. But you take away a lot that teams have to do if you can take their serve, make the right decision as a setter, and then make the right attack and hit it hard enough to just win right now. Because as the matches goes longer, there's less information for the opponent to adjust to. And when multiple people are scoring in each, you know, little rotations we have, the harder it is for others to prepare for us. So first ball attacking for sure.
Chris has talked about getting more production, more involvement from the middles. How do you go about attacking that issue?
It's twofold. It's our middles being available for the things that, you know, we're asking them to do. You know, a lot of the middles, you know, you have to put it on us coaches as we, you know, we change things with them a lot. So, you know, it could be maybe be easier if we just picked one thing and just got really, really good at, try to get really, really good at that. But there's reasons we would like to have multiple things that they can do because, you know, teams defend you differently. So them moving around and being able to expand what they can do, but then also do the setters have the ability to set the ball to them where each person can connect, because you can't set every person exactly the same. I wish it was as easy as that, writing it on, you know, writing on paper, but it's not. Emma Wright's slightly different than Brooke Smith, you know, slightly different than Natalie Foster, who's slightly different than Lauren McMahon. So the setters really finding that connection is really important. But if we can get them on the scoreboard and them help to our first ball kill percentage, they'll get on the, you know, that will really help our team because they'll get available in transition. But we're also in a conference who they pay a lot of attention to what our middles do. So it's kind of like, you know, they're double teaming Steph Curry. Well, a lot of times the other team's double teaming our middle blocker, which makes it harder for us to score. So then can they be creative with that and then make the right decision when they are in a disadvantageous position?
So are they really focusing on the middles just because of Wichita State's kind of historic success in that at that spot?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to ask some of the coaches in our league. That certainly could be. It also could just be that's how they've decided to play their defense. You know, some want to play a zone defense, some want to play a man defense, and some just do what they do. Some teams just follow the middle, regardless of if you set the middle or a lot or not. Some will pay attention to who they think you're going to set or who's hot. There's definitely that. But our conference has definitely shown that they are going to be ones that those middle blockers will move around. Those middles aren't going to just stand still and react like a BYU or like a SIU used to in our conference or what a K-State would do. They definitely do things differently, so we have to, you know, be able to beat that type of defense.
I know we're well into Wichita State being in the American, but are there other stylistic differences from the Valley that fans might be interested in hearing?
Yeah, I think pin play is definitely upgraded. So sometimes the game's honestly a little slower at times. I mean, there's teams that, you know, UCF runs a bit of a faster offense, meaning the ball has less time from the setter's hands to the hitter's hands. But there's some powerful pin players in our conference, so it's just harder to defend. You know, the Valley had to get a little bit more creative with how do I score with the right side player and middle blockers with tactics and techniques where, you know, I'm not saying that coaches don't have to be, aren't as creative. They just, you know, volleyball gets easier when your pin players are more powerful. It's like, don't, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Just set that girl who's jumps really high and hits really hard because she scores at a really high rate. So there's definitely more of that. There's more power in this conference from a physicality standpoint. And there's some really good coaches that have been doing this for a really long time in our league. And I think this, you know, as we continue to get better as a league, I think we will be a 3 and hopefully a 4-team bid league at some point. as far as at-large bids to the NCAA tournament.
Shockers lead the American in opponent hitting percentage at .119. Take us through this team's defensive improvement.
A lot of it is just the starts with attitude. I had a high school coach that, you know, won a couple national championships as a player at UCLA and then also as a assistant coach at UCLA, and he always used to say, defense is about confidence and aggression. It has nothing to do with skill. Well, I think there's some skill in there, but there's just an attitude that you're going to have that we are going to try, and balls are going to hit off the block, and they're going to tip it, and we're not going to watch it. We're going to run after it, and we're going to make it hard for other teams to score. They're going to have to earn their points. The one that we've adapted that at the back row because of Chelsea and Lambeau, just what they've put in place over our spring or fall. And then we've changed things. I've watched a ton of blockers at the professional level and international level. And, you know, how blocking is seeping over from the men's game is now getting into the women's game. And so we've changed some things as far as how we're going to block. And we have the athletes to try to do this. And, you know, we're playing this kind of technique and system with them, and they're doing a great job. So we've simplified things really for us as coaches. It's like, we're going to play this way, and then let's see who can beat it. And right now, people aren't beating it at a rate that's like, why do anything else? So we're going to just keep trying to get better at this.
Sina Ulave has moved from attacker to libero. How she made such a smooth transition to that spot?
It's nice that it seems smooth, to the outside world, because I'm sure to Sina it doesn't feel that way. Because honestly, Lily Likwe has done an amazing job, and it's like we have a decision to make every match. So although, I mean, an outsider may look at it and be like, oh, well, Sina's been doing great. She's the starter, obviously. I mean, for us coaches, it's really not. I mean, it could easily be Lily. So there's that little battle going on, which is nice. But I think ultimately, Sina's just a competitor. So lights come on, time to play. You know, you don't have to, you know, give Sina a rah-rah speech of, you know, get ready for this match. I think now it's like we got to learn to teach technique and discipline and some stuff as far as how you play this position, me and Chelsea are not easy on these liberos, unfortunately, probably because it's we played that position, which we expect a lot out of those guys, so they're letting us push them, but, you know, Sina's doing a great job just being thrown in there and just being what she is, which is a competitor, and I'll take a competitor that, you know, will do anything to win, and then we'll figure it out how we skill them there, but she's earned the jersey as of right now because of her passing. Her passing number has been very consistent in matches. Lily has been really consistent in practice, which makes us want to give her that opportunity. But, you know, with the opportunities they've both been given in matches, Sina's done slightly better in that regard. And that's really what's keeping her in the jersey. Because Lily's been doing really, really well on defense. And if, you know, unfortunately for Lily, we're just not in a system right now that gets two of those guys out there.
Briley Kelly, outside hitter. She played really well in the fall. She came back, played in the Tulsa matches, had double-digit kills in both of those. Having Briley Kelly out there, what does she add to this team?
Just a physicality that's different than other players. She just has the ability to jump higher and hit different angles that other girls aren't. Her and Sophia, for sure, if you were to watch, you know, Power 5 teams or the Big 12 or SEC, the Big 10, or, you know, the Pac-12, those would be the two. Like, if you had to pick two kids to say, hey, put them on those teams, and who would look like they fit in, it would be those two, just because of their length and physicality. And you kind of have seen that, you know, with Briley. She added a different component that people have to prepare for, because you can't just leave her and Sophia by themselves, you know, with one blocker and kind of be able to deal with them. So that, and then just them as, you know, blockers, you know, setting the ball when Sophia's in front of the net or Briley Kelly is, you know, not the best idea for opponents with the data we've gathered so far. They just, their physical presence at the net changes things for the other team. And hopefully we can get Briley's passing, you know, going. We've been spending a lot of time with that, and as soon as she can hammer down that role, she's going to be an elite back row attacker also. So we're going to let her do what she's doing great right now and try not to get in the way of that too much, and then we'll be training, you know, what we want them doing for the future as we go.
Nicole Anderson is also off to a really strong start for the Shockers. She was Conference Player of the Week earlier this season. She's talked a lot about the mental side of it, gaining confidence. Tell me about her improvement from your perspective.
Yeah, I would guess that, you know, Nicole's success is totally dependent upon, you know, how she's feeling. One, does she think we believe in her as coaches? That might be it. She's a hard person to read. As far as me as a coach, I never know exactly what she's thinking. But my favorite thing about Nicole is just how intuitive she is, how analytical. Like, she sees things, and she always asks great questions during scouting report. She pays attention to just little things that, you know, hey, we're going to defend this way. And there's not as many, oh, shoot, I kind of had, you know, a brain mislapse on that play after, you know, I mean, she doesn't miss it. So when we have a scouting report and say, hey, we're going to do this against number whatever, Nicole's going to remember, which is really helpful. So I hope she can learn to be, you know, take that as confidence building and be kind of the coach on the floor, directing traffic and helping some of these other girls that are just worried so much about, you know, performing their own job, that it's hard for them to remember, oh, shoot, number six over there is doing this, I got to do this, and number five is doing that. She can kind of be the coach on the floor, because I think she's in a place where she's done so well with all of the other things she needs to do, that hopefully she's has the confidence to kind of be more of that kind of vocal coach on the floor leader.
You mentioned at-large bids to the NCAA tournament earlier in the conversation. I guess that's going to be kind of a mystery, kind of a guessing game. If we look around the American right now, UCF has some top 25 votes. Houston leads the West Division at 4-0. We've kind of got limited non-conference matches to give us information. So how is the coaching staff thinking about earning these at-large
spots?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think we're there. Like, I mean, we've had a few non-con matches. It's a bummer. We couldn't play K-State because K-State was rising. You know, they're in like third or so or fourth in the first half of their season in the Big 12. So if we were able to get a win or two against a team like that, that would really help that. But I mean, the way I see it, it's like you're getting into the tournament if you win your tournament or you win your league. And that's where my focus is, and I hope our team's focus is, who cares about the ranking? This thing, we got to beat SMU, because SMU's going to, I mean, this is their season right now. They can't lose two matches this weekend. You know, so they're going to they need some wins. So we just need to get the top two in our conference, and then hopefully we're playing the best volleyball, you know, at the end of the year at the conference tournament. But we got to get there, and it's going to be no picnic in our half of the league, that's for sure. Tulane's great. I've watched Memphis on TV, and I mean, they're better than I think people will think. And then I obviously know Tulsa's better than I thought they'd be. So it's going to be a dogfight. We'll see. And Houston, I mean, they have maybe two of the best lefts in our whole league. Collectively, so those two girls are no joke. I mean, they are hard to deal with. So it's gonna be a really competitive west half of this conference, and then UCF and Cincinnati and everybody on the other side. I mean, it's a really good conference, top to bottom. So hopefully, we all can win and take a lot of wins into a conference tournament, and then, you know, whoever gets to the final, maybe, you know, the committee will think, you know, our league's that worth to. So we'll see, but who knows.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you...